Hi, everybody. David Capes with the Stone Chapel Podcast. Often I get the question, what can you do with a biblical studies degree? Often parents want to know that because they're paying for their sons, their daughters' education, and they want to make sure that there's something at the end of the road that they can do with this degree. Well, the answer to that is really a lot of things. Today, we'll be referencing a book in the podcast that is all about that question, what can you do with the biblical studies degree? There's more about that in the show notes, so make sure you look for that if that's a question that's on your mind. But today we're going to look at one of those paths, and that is the path of archaeology. So we're going to come back to an archaeologist who's been with us before. His name is Steve Ortiz. He's well known around the world as a very competent and prominent archaeologist. And we're going to talk about that in particular, and then we're going to segue a little bit into what is happening today at the Lanier Center for Archaeology at Lipscomb University. So today on the Stone Chapel Podcast, Steve Ortiz.
Hi, I'm Steve Ortiz. I'm the director of the Lanier Center for Archaeology at Lipscomb University, Nashville, Tennessee.
Dr. Steve Ortiz. Steve, good to see you. Welcome back.
I enjoy being here. Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's great to have different disciplines. You know, I do biblical studies, and a lot of the people maybe who have been on the podcast to do biblical studies, but there are other disciplines out there that make use of what we do. And so we're glad that you're back. Now, today we're going to talk about an article that you wrote. It's for a book. It's just recently come out, I guess this year, right?
Yes.
The title of the book is a good one, and I would suggest people run it if they're interested in these studies to go out and get it. It's called What Can You Do With Your Bible Training? Traditional and Non-Traditional Vocational Paths, edited by Brandon Benzinger and Adam Day. So you contributed an article particularly on archaeology because you've had quite a journey yourself in all of this. Tell me a little bit about the article.
Well, I first refused them because I'm basically saying you cannot get a biblical degree and go into archaeology. But I understand it because they're so integrated. And they kept saying, yes, but there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
And as I thought about it, it was healing for me as reflective.
Hmm.
I like the article.
Well, good. But, I mean, yes, because they are. Sometimes we write at a catharsis, don't we?
Yes.
We have to kind of think through about your journey, right? Because you've been at this for a while.
Yes, and it was very reflective for me.
Yeah. So you said that you can't start with Bible and just do Bible and then just go off and do archaeology. But can you go that little round? Start with archaeology, then study the Bible, and then do biblical archaeology. Can you do it the other way around?
Yes, you can do it both ways. And that's the, let's say, my second incarnation, if I can use that term, of my career, is where I developed, I guess, the program where our degrees are called archaeology and biblical studies. Because I'm emphasizing that they're two separate disciplines, but they complement each other. And so it doesn't matter where you start. If you start in archaeology, then we thought you have to get more Bible if you're going to do biblical archaeology.
So in archaeology, you're uncovering material culture and material remains from a particular civilization, time period, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Which includes pottery and maybe coins and parts of a wall or just a variety of things that you do. And then what does the Bible contribute to any of that? Studying the literature of the Bible.
Right. Well, and that's where it's more Old Testament history or New Testament history. So we treat the Bible as a historical text. Now, I do believe it's the Word of God. I believe it's a theological document. I believe it has power. But as a historian, we can read it and put it within its historical context. And that's how it complements archaeology and vice versa. Archaeology helps us to understand the Bible because we're able to put it within its historical and cultural context.
Well, I've heard archaeologists say, you can't dig up God.
Yes.
Right? God's a pretty big player in the Old Testament, but we can't really say, well, I've dug this up and therefore I see evidence of God's hand at work because I've found this particular item. So there's a faith element to that. in terms of whether God did that. But when you're looking for this city or that city, or trying to understand, was this a fortress, or was what kind of outpost was this? All of that you can figure out with archaeology.
Correct. And that's the recovering the history. Hmm. I'll tell my secular components or the minimalist, I go, just because David's historical, it doesn't mean the Bible's true in terms of a faith context. Mm-hmm. I go, David's just a historical person, but it's the text itself, the Holy Spirit breathed into the text that makes it a book about God. And so we're familiar with this. You can study, you can go to a university and take Bible courses.
Right.
And they're taught by people without any faith, but they can teach them as a historical context. They can teach them as a literary context. They can teach them even political science, because the Bible has influenced so much of our culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Bible, obviously, through the history, has had a tremendous influence, as you say, on yes. our culture, our Western culture. So your own journey in this, did you start off to be an archaeologist?
Yes, but I got interested in the Bible first. Okay. I wanted to study the Bible. And then as you start studying the biblical text, it's like, I have to learn about the historical geographical context before I can even begin to interpret it. And when I was 18, I wanted to go to Israel and just move there and dig. My father wouldn't let me. He thought that was crazy. And so I went to university, local Cal State Los Angeles. I grew up in East LA, and that was the nearest university. And I did anthropology and sociology. And after my junior year, I would get BAR, Biblical Archaeological Review, the mm-hmm. popular magazine.
Sure.
And I remember my dad saying, now, my father and I are the only believers in our family, were at the time, you know. Mm. I mean, still are, I mean, he's passed away. But he goes, you know, I can't beat this out of you, so this must be of the Lord. And he borrowed some money from my grandmother, and I had my first trip to Israel, and it was a study tour. And it was that study tour that I was on a dig, and I just said, I'm coming back. I love this. And I knew I was, you know, coming back. I finished my undergraduate.
Was it the heat? Was it the dust, the rocks? What was it?
The discovery, the questions, the dirt, everything. I just enjoyed the, you know.
Getting your hands dirty, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, all that.
I enjoyed the hard work, too. So it was just a little bit of everything that just.
Where are you digging now?
In theory, our Old Testament archaeologists, so I dig in. You know,
Old Testament the
Southern Levant, an Old Testament site. We're doing a current one. It's Tel Berna, and it's probably biblical Libna, and that's in the foothills. The site before that was Tel Gezer, which is a major Iron Age site. And that was purposeful because a lot of my PhD students are working on these projects and doing their dissertations with these projects. So we had a major site from Solomon, is one of the three fortified cities. And Tel Berna is a smaller town, or, you know, it's closer to the Judean heartland.
Got it.
So it's sort of like studying, you know, a major city, Houston, and then a smaller country town, you know, some city north of Houston.
Yeah.
And kind of getting that flavor between a hometown Judean.
I remember hearing a discussion one time about the Hebrew word ear. Now, the word ear means city.
Yes.
In Hebrew, right. Doesn't mean human. Interesting. Yeah, but ear, and trying to figure out from a biblical point of view, when you see the word ear, what are we to think about? Because when we think of Houston, we don't think of a wall around Houston, right? Yes. We think of freeways, and we think of lots of houses and those kind of things. Is the word itself just an imprecise word? Can it be used for anything from what we would maybe call a little town to a big city?
Yes, just like the English word city. You know, I'll have students from all over the U.S., and they'll talk about their city, and we'll joke about it. When do you have a city? Well, post office and stoplight.
That's all you need.
That's all you need in your city. And, and sometimes it's true. You know,
sometimes the city limit sign helps you.
Yes.
But it's an imprecise term, right?
Right.
We don't have mile markers or anything on long-range roads to know exactly how far apart these places are.
And that's what we're learning. Tel Gezer's a walled city. Mm-hmm. But Tel Berna, biblical Libna, during the time of David, it was unwalled. Mm-hmm. It was more like a village or a town. And then that city was destroyed. And we think it was part of the Shishak destruction. This is an Egyptian pharaoh that came through that also conquered Gezer. And on top of that destroyed city, let's say the Davidic city or the city during the time of David's and Solomon's rule, we have a brand new fortification built on top. And we're probably associating this with Rehoboam's fortifications. Libna was one of the ones that was fortified. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, we're looking at boundary changes. Now this small city is probably the boundary of the state of Judah. And now that has to be a fortified city. And so we can talk about this contraction, expansion of the United Kingdom, going westward toward the coast and then contracting under Rehoboam.
Earlier, you used the term Bronze Age, and we have, you know, Iron Age and other things like that. That's the language you guys speak, but it's foreign. Some would say it's Greek to me.
Yes.
You know, but you guys have a fairly good sense of when these things are, right, in terms of timeline. When you think the end of the Bronze Age and beginning of the Iron Age, there's a particular sort of window of time that you're thinking about.
Yes, and most agree. There's, you know, 100 years where you're arguing which, you know.
Plus or minus.
Plus or minus.
Okay.
And it's like any historical period. People didn't wake up one day and say, we're in the late Bronze Age, and today is now the Iron Age, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it
yeah.
shifts.
As know? Of today.
Yes, it's, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, we can look at this relative history mm-hmm. and these gradual shifts. Yeah. And we're trying to connected with historical datum points, but it's also the shift in material culture.
So the word tell, you used also the word tell earlier, which not everybody understands, mm. Telberna, Telgezer.
Yes.
A tell is one of these artificial mounds, right, that is built up over centuries of habitation, I suppose.
Correct, yes. So people lived where a place that's close to water, a good defensive location. So throughout the centuries, they keep building on the same place, and towns, cities, villages are built with mud brick. That gets destroyed, and so just you're just putting a layer of mud, so to speak, and it just keeps building up and building up. And
so you start at the top. That's the most recent period.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And as you go deeper, you get further and further back.
Yes. So at Talberna, biblical Libna, we have Israeli foxholes on top. So
foxholes.
We even have something from the modern period.
Wow, okay.
And then they can be dug into a Hellenistic or Persian period, which is dug into or built on top of Israelite period, the Iron Age period. And then we have a gap. And then we have a Canaanite period. But each city is different. And so at Gezer, we have continuous occupation from the early Bronze Age, the third millennium, all the way up to 733.
So it was never destroyed in that period of time?
It was destroyed and just rebuilt.
Oh,
destroyed
okay.
and rebuilt.
Continuous,
right?
Mean
right.
It wasn't,
yes. So, like at Berna, we have like a 200-year abandonment.
And you can see those destruction layers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You look for fire. You look for darkened
right.
carbon.
Or abandoned areas. So sometimes you just find the structure.
Okay.
And nothing's built on top of it.
You guys at the Lanier Center for Archaeology are digging in more places than one, right? You've also got a colleague who's more on the New Testament, Hellenistic Age, Greco-Roman period.
Yes.
Tell us about Tom Davis and where he's digging.
Well, we don't have enough time to talk about my colleague Tom Davis, but I'll talk about our program.
He leads talk about.
Tom was hired to, you know, compliment me. And he does a lot of periods. He does the Mediterranean. He was the director of the CARI, the Cypriot Archaeological Institute on Cyprus.
Cyprus, right.
And so as the director, he had to cover all periods from prehistory all the way to, you know, modern history. But now Tom sort of specializes in the later periods. And so we just call him our New Testament archaeologist, but that's just so our students, we make sure our students are trained in the material culture from a complete history.
So if you train in one period, can you import that to a different period? In other words, if you train in Bronze Age or Iron Age, can you transfer those same sort of skill sets over to a different period, or do you have to stay in that period? You're
similar to biblical languages.
Okay.
So Hebrew is different from Greek.
Mm-hmm.
But if you study Hebrew and you develop linguistical exegetical skills, they can transfer when you study Greek. But the Greek alphabet is totally different from the Hebrew alphabet, the lettering.
It's
a different language,
right?
But the principle's the same. So if you're trained as an archaeologist, that skill can transfer, but the material culture is totally different. It's a different language, so to speak.
So you have to look for and be trained in the kind of artifacts that you would find.
Yes, in a later
period, right?
Just like a historian. If you're a historian of the Civil War, you can't be a historian of ancient China.
Apples and oranges.
Right. But you're still good at studying texts and reconstructing history from it.
So are there any, you said New Testament, later periods as well. How late are we talking about? Are you talking about down to the late Middle Ages? Or are we talking about early Middle Ages?
We have a project from the late antiquity, Crusader period. And that's our Kazakhstan project.
Okay.
But in terms of training a New Testament archaeologist, we usually go from the Hellenistic to the Byzantine period.
Okay.
In terms of the material culture, and, buildings and like that.
So that when you say Hellenistic, again, that's for some people a bit of a foreign language. How far
Alexander
back?
The Great.
Alexander the Great. So roughly 300 BC or BCE, all the way up to maybe 500 AD, something to that effect.
I'll give an example. I was asked to write a dictionary article on the archaeology of the Old Testament. Well, I stop in 586, the Babylonian destruction. And then you have the Persian period that starts up. And to me, that's modern history. That's New Testament, because the material culture is the same.
Right.
And the editor said he left out, the Persian period. I go, that's New Testament. He goes, no, it's not. It's Ezra and Nehemiah. That's the Old Testament. And I go, for example, Persian period coinage comes. But in the Old Testament, there's no coins. And so the material culture, it's a drastic shift. And so at that point, I go, you got me. I have to do the archaeology of the Old Testament that includes the Persian period. But if I'm talking to my archaeology colleagues, it's like, no, that's a different language. That's a different material culture.
And sometimes just 50, 100 years can make a big difference.
Yes. Right?
Because when you go from no coinage and just bartering and a variety of things like that, down to coins being minted and used and circulated for value and economics, that's a pretty big shift.
Right. And then when you get specialized, you can have New Testament archaeologists arguing, I only do Hellenistic, the 3rd and 2nd century.
Right, yeah.
And somebody goes, I do early Roman, I do late Roman. And just like history, you can specialize in a 100-year period.
So if you were to say you specialized in something, what would be your specialty?
The Iron Age, the first millennium BC, the archaeology of David and Solomon.
So from roughly 1000 BC, a little before that, down further, maybe down to 586 BC, something like that. So about a 400-year period.
Yeah.
Is that fairly common among archaeologists to have a period that they specialize in?
Yes, but when you excavate, you have to control all the periods.
Yeah, like you're excavating down through several, maybe starting at a crusader level on your way down to your specialty.
Yes,
so you got to go through several different layers,
and you're responsible because archaeology is a destructive science. Once you excavate it, it's gone. So the projects are very multidisciplinary. So depending what you have, if we come across something and it's beyond our specialty, it's like, okay, we have to find a crusader person because we have some crusader occupation here.
Well, it really is a collaborative science, isn't it?
Yes.
As you're digging, maybe you discover some graves.
Yes.
And you've got to know something about human remains, or maybe in some cases animal remains if you find those in certain places. And so you're probably not a specialist in understanding the human physiology and bone stuff. So you need to call somebody like that in.
Yes, we'll have to call a physical anthropologist to come in and
help you with that.
Right. And which we did at Gezer. We had three bodies, so to speak, in a Merneptah destruction.
Merneptah being an Egyptian.
Pharaoh.
So you're digging Tel Barna, you've dug in Tel Gezer. Tom Davis has been digging in Cyprus, but now also over in Kazakhstan as well.
Kazakhstan, and we just started a new project. We joined the Abila project.
Okay, meaning?
And that's a Byzantine. Abila is a site in northern Jordan, the modern state of Jordan.
Okay.
And Kurian is ending. just like Gezer ends. Basically, for every season you're in the field, you have like 2 years that you need to publish the material, study the material. Mm. So Gezer, it was a 10-year project. In theory, it can take me 20 years to...
I started to say, can you fully explore a site in 10 years?
No.
I mean, you're sort of scratching the surface.
I dug at Talmikne, which is a Philistine city of Ekron. Big joint American-Israeli project. Yeah. And over 100 people every summer excavating. 9-week seasons. And we probably only uncovered maybe 5% of the city.
Wow.
So could you imagine, can you define Houston or Nashville with just 5% if you just dug one, you know?
Yeah, if you just found 5% of it, can you say everything that can be said about that particular city? Once these places are dug, do they become theme parks like Disney World? I mean, what happens there at a place that you've been digging and you've found some human remains, material things? Does it become a park that people go visit? What happens in Israel in particular, since you're used to digging up in Israel? So,
well, it depends on the site. There's a lot of CRM work, which is cultural resource management. Mm-hmm. A kibbutz is building a new dining hall. They're expanding a road. And so you need an archaeological excavation to occur before that. Same thing here in North America, in the United States, Canada. We have CRM work where if you're going to build something, we're here at the Lanier Theological Library. And you all just have major building going on.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
The company had to have looked up to make sure there's no Indian remains or, you know.
Right, right.
Early Houstonian remains or whatever
right,
is, you know,
spirit
here.
Before they even begin to dig.
And so the government will determine if those are worth saving. So there's sometimes roads have been rerouted because there's something of historical or cultural significance. So that will occur. If this is something important, it'll be preserved or saved. Israel has a strong tourism industry, and you're attracting Christian and Jewish tourists to go there because they're interested in Bible history and they're interested in the context of the Bible. It's big money to walk where Jesus walked, you know, go by the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah,
so,
it is,
you know.
People spend thousands of dollars to get to Israel and stay.
And for people of faith, it's important for them. It, you know, the Bible comes alive in 3D to be in these places.
Right.
So Talberna, it's out in a cow pasture. It's not going to be, there's not going to be tourists going there.
Right. Anytime soon.
It's hard to get there, to there. Tal Gezer is an important site. So that became a national monument. And so now it's a national park. And, you know, the government, you have a park ranger that will visit it and make sure it's, you know, being secure. Taken care of and secure. We restored a couple buildings for tourists to see. There's a Israelite house, a classic four-room house. Hmm. We restored that house. The Solomonic Gate was restored. So there's some national monuments that are restored.
That's all part of the archaeological process.
Right. Just like here in the U.S., George Washington's boyhood home will be restored.
Mm-hmm.
But David Cape's boyhood home, I'm sure,
probably will not be.
It'll be, yes. There'll be a 7-Eleven built on that.
Yeah, yes. likely. Yes. Yeah. I remember going to, and you can still go to Memphis and see Graceland and places where Elvis Presley used to, you know, sleep in his house. And we were in Liverpool not long ago, and hey, this is where John Lennon lived, right? There's Paul McCartney's house down that road. So anyway, not going to be a national monument. Hey, but this is really enlightening, though, about what you guys do at the Lanier Center for Archaeology. We're so proud of the work that you're doing. You've got lots of students there studying. You're going to be sending out archaeologists for the next 50, 100 years.
Lord willing, yes, that's our goal.
That's your goal. All right. Thanks for being with us today. Well, I hope you see now that there is something you can do with that biblical studies degree, and there's a lot of other things as well. But one of those things is to go into the field of archaeology. It's a really critical, important field for understanding our past and to being able to put together material culture. Bible study and knowing the biblical text helps us because it is a historical source, both in the Old and New Testaments, for things that were going on at that particular time. So, at any rate, we're really grateful to Steve for being being with us today. If you haven't subscribed to this podcast, please do that. Tell a friend about it. We want to greet those folks who are listening in Australia. We've got people listening to this podcast in the land down under, as they say. And we're really grateful for that. Please share it with your friends there. And we look forward to maybe one day being down there with you. But in the meantime, I'm David Capes, and this is the Stone Chapel Podcast.